Good afternoon and welcome to this latest podcast from Cornwall Insight. My name is Robert Buckley, Head of Relationship Development. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Rob Gross from the UK Energy Research Centre and my colleague, Tom Edwards. Rob, can I just ask you to say hi and introduce yourself?
Hi, Robert. Thanks very much for the opportunity to take part. As you've already said, I'm Rob Gross. I'm a professor at Imperial College working on energy policy. And I'm also the director of something called the UK Energy Research Centre.
Would you like to say a little bit, Rob, about a little bit more about who the UK Energy Research Centre is and your role within the group?
Very happy to. So UKERC, which is shorter, is a large consortium of universities. It's funded. So publicly funded through UK Research and Innovation, the research councils. Unusually for a university consortium, it's been going for a long time, 20 years nearly. So we've been through four phases of funding, and there's about 20 universities in our core partner group at the moment. It was for many years based, hosted at, headquartered at Imperial College. For the last few years, it's been headquartered at UCL. And we aim to do the whole energy system. So we are the whole system's interdisciplinary research consortium. We don't do, you know, particular bits of engineering or bits of kit. And so we try to have an understanding of everything from engineering and bits of kit through to human behavior. And although we're publicly funded, we are independent of government, so we're able to be critical and helpful, and a bit of both usually when it comes to policy making.
Great, thank you. And Tom.
Thanks, Robert. My name is Tom Edwards. I'm a senior modeler in the Cornwall Insight modeling team.
Great. Now we're here today to have a chat about proposals that may involve intervening in wholesale energy markets to alleviate some of the crisis in energy costs, and specifically a pot zero proposal that Rob and his team have been working on over the last several months. That's a fair description of the timeline.
We rushed the original version of our paper out in April, and we managed to do the analysis and write the paper in a few weeks, just because it felt so urgent. Yeah. But it's continued to be in the conversation with industry, policymakers and others. And we were recently joined by you guys with some more up-to-date analysis that was in a blog, I think it was, or yeah, a briefing paper, yeah, that you published a week or so ago. So, you're right. 6 months.
Great. How did the idea originate? What was your thinking in coming up with the concept?
Basically, just to try and think of what at the time I thought would be a quick way, although months have elapsed now with not anything actually being decided, a quick and relatively straightforward way to reduce what we might describe as an overpayment to nuclear and renewables, by which I mean the way that the wholesale electricity market functions is such that there is a market-wide price. That market-wide price is now, and usually in the past also, was set by the price of gas. But what we've seen in the last year or so is that the price of gas has gone into the stratosphere, and that has implications, obviously, for consumers. And we were trying to think of a way that we could help to reduce the burden on consumers by paying renewables and nuclear a bit less, without meddling with the fundamentals of the market or having a very kind of heavy-handed intervention by the government, which we have seen in some other countries. And this seemed a clever way of doing that. And the reason for that is that the newest renewables schemes already receive a fixed price that's well below wholesale price. So will the new nuclear power station that's currently nearly finished, we're told, under construction. But all of the older renewables and older nuclear power stations just get the market price, and in some instances they get a subsidy on top of that.
Mm-hmm. So what responses have you had to the proposal, but particularly from generators themselves? Are they attracted at the idea of earning less?
You would think that they would not be, and at first they weren't. I mean, I wouldn't say that the phone was ringing off the hook in terms of what the energy industry had had to, you know, their responses to it. But the interesting thing is that as the time has worn on, wholesale prices have gone even higher. The extent and the severity of the crisis has increased. And at the same time, obviously, these companies can see the government kind of wielding the threat of a windfall tax or some other intervention. And so a couple of weeks ago, the boss of a big generator SSE came out in support of our idea or a variant of it. And last week, the Energy Industry Association, Energy UK, came out in support of our idea, explicitly referenced the paper that we put out in April. And one of the things that was always in our minds as we were writing it is it's not just a price cap. We're not just saying sell your electricity for less because you don't need to be paid as much as you are, although that is almost certainly true. The idea was a bit like a fixed price mortgage, that but these contracts for difference, they run out, the current ones for renewables run for 15 years. The time duration of our new scheme, I mean, that's a detail the government would need to figure out. But the idea is the industry themselves know that these high prices won't last forever. When they're doing their financial planning, they have to make a judgment on when prices will come back down again. And so, yeah, I mean, they're foregoing some revenue now, but that's in exchange for the potential for more stable revenues over a longer period of time. And we always thought that might be attractive to the industry. When we first launched the paper, everybody commenting on it were quite dubious about why the industry would want to play along unless forced to do so. But now it seems as if the industry are actually quite willing to look at this idea and indeed quite enthusiastic about it.
I guess wholesale prices have what, doubled, tripled since back in April. So maybe that's concentrated their minds.
The other thing to point in there is that, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years, you've got lots of those old RO fit schemes will want to repower. And they're, you know, they're already thinking about what the future of that is. Either they go into the merchant market where they'll be exposed to unknown variables, especially around the price of power and possibly cannibalization. Or if you could get in on a CFD now without having to compete for it, that seems like a really good idea.
I completely agree. And that was, I mean, the irony is, that a year ago or so, prior to these gas price increases, the big concern amongst the kind of industry players and people thinking about the future of the electricity market was what Tom just described as price cannibalization, this idea, this phenomenon rather, that on a very windy or sunny day, particularly when demand is low, prices become very low, possibly even go negative. And so therefore, if you're thinking about developing a wind farm, for example, your revenue stream into the long term is very uncertain, and CFD contracts provide you with protection against that, then the interesting thing is that they also provide consumers with protection against very high prices.
Yeah, and intervention begets intervention. So if there is intervention to lower the prices and it results in long-term kind of contracts or stability, you'll change the market for a long time. And that, even though we've got high prices now, that cannibalization could easily return in the future. So that makes anything that's done now more attractive that provides those long-term signals.
How do you feel that the proposal fits into the wider range of ideas that are being discussed at the moment, like, for example, direct reductions in consumer bills or even intervening to force a lower gas price, or at least a lower gas price into the generation market?
So it's one of the one of the range of options that the new Prime Minister and the new Secretary of State, assuming that there's a reshuffle, and their officials, I would very much imagine, would have put a range of options on the table for doing stuff in the energy market. This is one option, and I mean, you know, I think perhaps a little bit behind some of the things that Tom was just saying, you know, no option is everything is, any intervention is likely to have unintended consequences. None of them is without consequence, The thing that we thought was attractive about our idea is that it has an upside for generators. It could be voluntary, that we could run an auction, there'd be some price discovery. But I mean, above all else, there's a war in Europe. It's really unprecedented. We've seen, you know, household bills could be up into the hundreds of pounds per month by the end of the winter, when previously they were in the tens of pounds per month. And it's having an impact on inflation. So, I mean, there's a number of things that could be done. You could intervene. We have a retail price cap, a downstream price cap. Last winter showed us that a downstream price cap can't protect us from upstream events. We could have an upstream price cap, and then the decision then would be, well, how do you make that work? In Spain and Portugal, the government is subsidizing gas generators to sell electricity below marginal price. That could be considered here. We could do stuff on our national gas balancing point price to force domestic production to be below global gas price. That's about half of our gas. We could reduce the price of it. I'm sure Tom will agree that all of these things would have been unthinkable in a kind of very pro-market, liberalised, country like the UK. But you have to think the unthinkable when you're in such unprecedented circumstances, in my view.
Agreed. We're not that far off a bulk supply tariff, really, are we, if we're going to start mixing and matching? And effectively, suppliers are, in hedging to the cap, are effectively trying their best to deliver that anyway, without the heft of a state balance sheet behind them. And I wonder how far we are off from that conversation, particularly if we start to direct quantities of, you know, renewables that would have come back into the market to go, you know, I'll use the term off market, it's not the right term, but into a new contractual framework where effectively the Secretary of State is deciding the volumes and the quantities, and you know, you begin to layer up some quite significant amounts of power that are coming off market, and then what are you left with to fill in the balance?
One of the things I wanted to ask on the Pot Zero and its comparison is that lots of the pushback I hear about this is that the contractual framework of the electricity market, so that's the fact that people are buying and selling bilaterally with each other, and there's no real fixed price for power or any sort of actual real, but at the moment there's basically no benchmark that is reliable. So how would that interact with the Pot Zero? Because, you know, lots of generators have to now retrade to get close to the reference price, or have to unpick their PPA, their power purchase arrangements.
Yeah, I mean, that's all very fair and accurate. And I think when we were putting the idea together, we didn't trouble ourselves too much with those details, I'll be honest. We looked at the capture price. We worked out what we thought wind and solar were actually getting from a very high wholesale price. And they're obviously as we've already said, prices tend to be low when it's windy, lower when it's windy and sunny. So they weren't getting the whole of the day ahead price, but we used that as a comparison point for the amount of saving. For all of the reasons that Tom has just articulated, it's actually quite difficult to know who within the industry is actually benefiting from consumer prices being very, very high. I mean, we assume that gas generators are not benefiting because they have to they're bearing a very high fuel cost. We know that the supplier
spot spread's not bad though.
Well, that's probably worth having a bit more of a look at and a think about and thinking about the relationship actually between everyone's pricing and the price cap, because the price people are now suppliers will be are pricing to the cap and not really seeking, as far as I can see, ways in which they could be, you know, making an offering that's more attractive than the cap. So there's all sorts of stuff that's going on in the market. But And it might be that a more heavy-handed intervention is more feasible now than it looked as to be in April. I mean, I don't think anyone would have countenanced a wholesale price cap in April or subsidising gas generators in the way that the Iberian Peninsula, Spanish and Portuguese have done. So the key thing that emerges for me from your observation is if people have sold forward, if they've hedged, if positions are being adjusted, then in the fullness of time, that hedging will end and everyone will be, the prices will actually genuinely be reflecting our new reality. Now, the disadvantage of that is it means that we might not be able to make an effective change quite as quickly as we might like, and we'll be able to do stuff in time for next, you know, the coming winter or the second half of this winter. I would still hope so, actually. And if I were able to spend lots of time thinking about this, one of the things I'd like to figure out is, well, could a government that was really minded to do something about this find the use the public purse to recompense for some of those hedges? Yeah. And try and get the price down across the piece. But I mean, maybe we probably can have a more an offline conversation, Tom, where we try and figure these things out that could take a bit longer than we've got.
I think that's one of the benefits of the pot zero approach, is that the CFD is kind of sitting there. It's a mechanism that is mostly intact and would mostly work. And there's a couple of things that you need to adjust. I mean, yeah, they are the, you know, tens of billions of pounds of existing contracts. But if there's one thing that the electricity industry has proven it can do, is it can write lots of contracts.
Indeed.
And I guess you're weighing up the cost of doing something like that with the cost of intervening further down the supply chain. So I wager that the costs of intervening at that wholesale level would be less, considerably less, than intervening to directly lower the bill for whichever consumers we decide need their bills lowering.
Yeah, I think if the further upstream you are able to intervene, I mean, obviously the ultimate upstream intervention would be as if we could resolve the crisis in Ukraine and overcome the kind of issues that are pushing gas prices as high as they are. But yeah, then in effect, the further downstream you intervene, the more rent has already flowed upstream.
Yeah,
and so therefore you're having to find the financial wherewithal to compensate for that.
Do you think that there's an awareness of that in the debate now, or do you think that's not really appreciated?
Very difficult to answer that question because I genuinely don't know. I think I don't want to mischaracterize the conversation within government, but I would say that I think that some in government really wanted to get to the fundamentals of this. This looked like one of the ways in which they could think about doing that. Others in government, I think, were probably a bit more legalistic in their mindset and looked at this and saw lots of legal peril and worried a great deal about the kind of implementation challenge. And that's completely understandable. So, I think that more minds are focusing more and more on the fundamentals of this, the more I think it's really coming home to people just how significant the impact of all of this is going to be on everyday households and businesses.
Indeed. And do you have a view how this relates to REMA? Is it in something that's independent? Could it run alongside?
Yeah, great question. That's a great, great question, because REMA, so that's the Review of Electricity Market Arrangements. It's a consultation that's out at the moment that BEIs are running. It was always intended to be a long-term thing that was looking out over the future, you know, what are we going to do in 10 years' time? How do we, you know, maybe we don't want to have the CFDs anymore. We don't want a capacity mechanism. How are we going to redesign our market? Really, really difficult to see how REMA could be used to do anything in time for this winter or next winter, or to make, you know, really rapid changes. But obviously, if you were to do something that is a bit like our idea, and if those CFD contracts, new ones, were to run for 10 or 15 years, you have, I suppose, tied the hands of the REMA process, right? Because those contracts will be difficult to unwind. So, you know, how much that matters. Do they need to be that long? I mean, that's really, that's I think, a question for
government. That's presumably to be negotiated as and when we get to the point.
Yeah, and are they going to be the same price for a fixed period of time, and what the terms, and, you know, there's a lot of things like that. But I think there was a bit of kind of, I would say, a bit of misinformation that was around at some point, and I can't remember whether it was the Chancellor or the Prime Minister or the Secretary of State, or all of them were basically saying, well, we know there's a problem, that's why we've got REMA. REMA's going to fix this. I felt terribly sorry for the REMA officials, because they must have literally, you know, can imagine their eyes popped out of their heads when they were told that they were, their kind of long-term review was going to fix next winter's price crisis.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's worth remembering that your proposal is voluntary. And it's very likely that we need to legislate for a change in trading arrangements at some point. So we're subject to parliamentary timescales and probably looking beyond the next election.
Indeed.
And who knows where we will be after that. Before I ask you Robert, a little bit more about what UKIRC is doing, looking at the long-term future for the British energy sector, how do you feel about the long-term outlook generally for the GB energy sector, given where we are and this great shock that we've had in terms of price and maybe even security of supply?
That's a really, really, really good question. I mean, it's interesting that the immediate reaction from previous Prime Minister, from Boris, was, you know, more hands to the low carbon pump. Let's get on with let's build more offshore wind farms. Let's put more public money into de-risking nuclear power stations and all of those things. I have to say that, you know, just for personal predilection, I'd be very much in favour of all of that. And I hope that that continues, because it can genuinely help us to deliver more domestically produced and cheaper energy that will ease any kind of security of supply crisis of the future, as well as reducing carbon emissions. I really don't know whether this is going to kind of rock the fundamentals of the way that we get our gas and electricity supplies in GB. We say UK, but obviously, you know, we provide gas into Ireland, but the Irish have their own arrangements. It's a single electricity market over there, for example. Ireland, the Republic, still part of the EU, which puts us in a very odd sort of position post-Brexit of at one EU member state being reliant upon a non-member state for its energy supplies. Another non-EU member state that's really important in all of this is Norway. This doesn't directly answer your question, Robert, but what I really, really hope is that we can, and this is not, I really hope not going to be messed up by the new Prime Minister, is we need a hugely cooperative, collaborative approach to energy security that is UK, Norway, EU, Western European Alliance, makes use of the fact that we've got good LNG import capacity, they've got more storage, we're still pumping out of the North Sea, so are the Norwegians. The last thing that we need is kind of energy nationalism.
Yeah. Indeed, I very much agree with that. In fact, I was going to ask you whether you think there's a case for a Western European buyer's cartel of gas respond to the various seller cartels that are out there.
It's really interesting that, I mean, I don't know whether or not we would get the political buy-in to have a kind of buyer's cartel. I think that certainly there's a diplomatic effort that we could, as Western Europe, have been taking a completely kind of concerted approach to if we were still part of the EU, that is obviously a bit more difficult now. So there's a demand related dimension to this as well, because it's going to be that marginal shipment of gas which is pushing the price through the roof, you know, and if we could find a way to reduce demand a bit, then we might not need that marginal shipment quite as much as we did previously, and that changes the price dynamic. So there's so many different aspects to this. There's you know, relationship with Europe post-Brexit, geopolitical aspect to it, and all of the kind of the detail of how prices are formed and what responsibility is placed on different bits of the supply chain to do what, that it's really quite difficult to unpick. I think we're going to see, I don't know, I'd be really interested in what Tom thinks about this as well, but for me, I think there's been a kind of a gradual erosion of, if you like, a kind of ideological attachment to all things liberalized, everything. I think this must give that a bigger knock. But I should stress that, again, you know, personal view, I don't see any sort of particular case for nationalizing the energy industry or public ownership or any of those things, but I do perhaps see quite a strong case for tighter regulation and rethinking, you know, what markets are for and the duration and nature. But Tom?
Yeah, I think one of the lessons of the pandemic was that resilience and security are very important things that we've neglected for quite some time. And in the case of, say, the energy industry, it's not having the backups, not having running systems to be more efficient over than the old term is gold plating. So perhaps we could have done with a bit of gold plating for this winter would have been useful. And I think that the kind of general feeling is that security will take on a much bigger portion of the what we used to call the energy trilemma, which in which renewables will play a big part. There's no doubt that, you know, offshore wind provides a huge amount of security of supply because it's here and close and generally quite abundant. But nuclear power stations, I think we might slow down on the amount of interconnectors and in favour of things that I think the capacity market, for example, might see interconnectors have their load factors reduced quite a bit so that they don't displace quite as much GB based generation. So I think that would be my kind of thing, is that, yeah, the a much greater focus on resilience, security of supply, and that's going to come with the FSO, so the move to the future system operator from, you know, from National Grid, ESO being a private company, bringing the future system operator into public ownership, creating a whole energy system of system view, which provides feedback and input into government's decisions, will kind of highlight that element and bring a bit more of the kind of strategic planning that's needed, hopefully in-house to government, who haven't, I guess, been as successful as we'd hope.
If I could add another point to your trilemma, I think we've got a fourth point, which is fairness. And I think that's another reason that you said the market, Rob, has been given a bit of a bashing or a bit of a dent. I think this perception, particularly in large parts of the retail market, the different outcomes for different consumers are acceptable. I think that's had a bit of a challenge. I think that needs a bit more thought, because there's a lot of flexibility and innovation that will arise from domestic, or could arise, should I say, from domestic consumers precisely because of that. And I think if you look at the retail market in particular, I think that's an area that could do with a lot more thought. The price cap is a very, very blunt instrument, and it's not able to manage upstream risk. I think it's arguable, or we would have been in a better place without the cap, because we would have done more hedging. Again, personal view, a fairness might be a fourth point for the traditional three points of the trilemma.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that the part of that fairness question is this, the kind of sense of this perception of profiteering, and that, you know, rent is being transferred from households to big companies. And the fact that we might say, well, we're not quite sure whether it's going to be going to, you know, whose pocket it's going to end up in, is irrelevant. If you're hard pressed household, or even a not so hard pressed household,
I definitely agree with that. Just from the conversations you have socially, that about this kind of thing. Did you want to say a few things about where people could get more information on UKIRC or ways of engaging? to conclude?
Yeah, so just in terms of the way that people can find out more about UKIRK, we've got a website which is fairly predictably the w's.ukirk.ac academic, so ukirk.ac.uk. You podcast listeners from kind of Cornwall's community might be interested that we have a newsletter that goes out. You can subscribe to that. We have a news roundup, headlines, daily headlines that
I can certainly recommend your daily.
Thank you. We understand that quite a lot of people read it, including people in government, quite high up in government, I'm told. And we're very keen to be engaging with industry and wider stakeholders.
Excellent. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Rob, for joining us today. We hope everyone has found this of interest, and we look forward to catching up with you again soon.